From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, New York Democrats push Republicans to abandon Donald Trump over his coarse remarks about women captured in a leaked video. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on that and the resignation of Elaine Calleros, the head of SUNY Poly. And Congressman Maloney introduces two pieces of legislation in response to the PFOS water contamination in Newburgh. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Democrats in New York are trying to keep the heat on Republicans running for office over the coarse remarks made by GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump in a leaked video. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Every day since the release of the tapes where Donald Trump disparages women in a crude manner, Governor Andrew Cuomo, a Democrat, has slammed the GOP presidential candidate. And he's urged New York Republicans to disassociate themselves from the top of their ticket.
It's a statement of values. It's a statement of character. And it's a statement of what we will accept and what we won't accept. And New Yorkers will not accept discrimination or sexism. We demand that everyone be treated with respect. And I think it's a time for the Republican leaders to stop playing this game of, well, I don't like the comments, but I support them. You can't have it both ways. It's a black and white issue. They should stand up and say, I'm a Republican, but I'm a New Yorker first. And we'll have nothing to do with the degradation of women.
Cuomo's admonitions don't extend to New Jersey, though, where Republican Governor Chris Christie is a Trump advisor.
It's not my place to tell him what to do.
The two neighboring governors have a kind of non-aggression pact, refusing to criticize each other in public. Christie, though, did not attend Sunday night's presidential debate, and he said in a radio interview Tuesday morning that Trump's comments were unacceptable. The presidential campaign could also play a major factor in the several close congressional races in New York, as well as in the fight for control of the state Senate. Republicans currently control the Senate with the help of one Democrat who meets with them. They do not have the numerical majority of 32 members that they need to lead the Senate outright. Democratic Senate leader Andrea Stewart Cousins is quick to condemn Senate Republicans who have not publicly disavowed Trump, saying it's shameful to continue to support a proven misogynist.
As he objectifies women and believes that because of his celebrity, his status, he can do anything to any woman he wants, is something that I think will, you know, obviously not only hurt him, but demands, really, Republicans and on the state Senate to say enough is enough.
Democrats believe the recent controversy surrounding Trump, combined with Democrat Hillary Clinton's strength overall in New York, could help them retake the Senate. Governor Cuomo, who also might be seeing the tide turn, is holding three fundraisers for Senate Democrats. The governor in past election cycles has been criticized for not doing enough to help Democrats win Senate seats. He's often prided himself on his good working relationship with the Senate GOP. Senate Republican leader John Flanagan, at the National Convention in Cleveland back in July, declared he was wholeheartedly a Trump backer.
I am supporting Donald Trump for president, and I'm going to do so with grace, with diplomacy, with passion, with fervor.
But now, through a spokesman, Senator Flanagan says that Donald Trump's recent comments are offensive and intolerable and do not represent the values of the men and women of the Republican Senate Conference. Flanagan spokesman Scott Reif makes a distinction between the Senate GOP and Trump's national candidacy, saying the Senate passed women's equality legislation that ensures equal pay for equal work, protects the victims of domestic violence, and creates zero tolerance for sexual harassment in the workplace. But he does not say whether Flanagan intends to fully break with Trump. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, you spoke with Casey Seiler, the state editor of the Albany Times-Union. You began by talking about Elaine Calieros, the head of SUNY Poly, caught up in a bid-rigging scheme alleged by federal and state prosecutors in New York. He has officially resigned his position this week.
Well, what he did was to resign his position as the head of what we call SUNY Poly, a vast network of schools and courses and students that he had been responsible for setting up, along with bringing various chip manufacturers and others to Albany. He was the darling of one governor after another, including Governor Andrew Cuomo, who saw him as a way to bring jobs to upstate New York. Now he falls. He falls, at least in terms of the accusations he falls, that he has done bid rigging. In other words, his favorites get advanced information or other ways of making sure that the people he wants are successful in arranging to do the contractual work. Now, the problem is that, of course, everybody has to prove it. We've got the McDonald decision in the Supreme Court. This is going to be tough. He faces both state and federal charges. So he resigns as the head of SUNY Poly, but he still has that high-paid job as a professor. Now, look, I was a professor all my life, but I didn't make the kind of money that he's making, that's for sure. And we're talking about one of the highest-paid professors in the state, and he wants to keep that money. For their part, the people at SUNY, his bosses, Carl McCall, Nancy Zimfer, say, we're studying that, we have to see it. But, you know, professors and tenure, that's pretty strong stuff, and that's called continuing appointment. I had it, others have it, but it's very hard. So Calieros is in real trouble. He's facing all of these criminal charges. He's tweeted a threat, apparently, that says, okay, I'll remember who's on what side when I get done with this. So there's a certain amount of arrogance in the guy. Some of it is deserved. He's worked very hard, and he has made a tremendous success out of what he has touched up to now.
Presidential race touching New York as the Democrats trying to keep the heat on Republicans running for office over the coarse remarks, of course, the lewd video released on GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump. They're using that to make hay.
You know, David, if you take a look at Trump's polling numbers, you find that this guy has 40% of the vote, and no matter what happens, the independents have been swinging towards Clinton, no question. And the New York Times gives Trump only an 11% chance of winning this election. Nevertheless, it is true that people who support Trump are continuing to support him, and I have to say that if you look at the demographics of New York State, you will find that a lot of the Trump supporters are upstate New York. And what that means, of course, is that the state Senate, which is up for grabs, is going to be dependent on how many people come out to vote for either of these candidates and then go down ballot and look for like-minded people. So if you're a Republican in upstate New York and you are voting for Donald Trump, then you come down and you look for other Republicans, perhaps. If you're a Democrat, you look for Democrats. This is in the presidential elections. There is no question that the Democrats tend to do better than in the off-year elections where the Republicans tend to do better. This is a presidential year. The big question is, will there be enough Democratic voters coming out in strategic places to carry the state Senate for the Democrats?
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio in WikiLeaks emails show him venting at and appealing to the Clinton campaign. We've known some of this.
Yeah, you know, de Blasio has seen himself as a Bernie Sanders type of to-the-left person in New York City. He's popular among certain groups for that. He's doing what anybody would do. He's trying to put pressure on Clinton to move over to the left. So is Bernie Sanders. Look, there have been damning things about various politicians in the WikiLeaks. I don't see this as particularly harmful.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney has introduced two pieces of legislation in response to the PFOS water contamination in Newburgh. The bills come shortly after the State Department of Health announced a PFOS blood testing program for Newburgh. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
The Democratic congressman Tuesday stood by Washington Lake in Newburgh, the city's former main drinking water supply that is contaminated with PFOS, and announced his Investing in Testing Act.
So we don't know right now exactly what the safe levels in human blood are of these types of contaminants. We know they're not good, but the Centers for Disease Control needs to immediately study this issue and to understand it better. So my legislation would set aside $15 million for a two-year study by the Centers for Disease Control to understand better what the safe level of PFOAs and PFOSs are in human blood.
The State Department of Health, during a public forum on PFOS contamination in Newburgh in September, formally announced a biomonitoring program for the city for which residents have been signing up. Again, Maloney.
We don't know whether there are going to be serious health effects or not. We don't have any reason to believe there will be, and we are hopeful that we won't see any adverse health effects by city residents. But we're not going to happy talk it, and we're not going to make the mistake they made in Flint, where people were telling people the water was safe when it wasn't.
Newburgh City Manager Michael Caravino notes details of the blood testing program are still being worked out.
So at the end of the day, what our residents are asking for is to be tested. They want the question marks that are starting to haunt them over the last couple of decades answered. Do we have a cancer-causing substance in our bodies? And if so, what can we do to develop some type of treatment modalities or long-term studies? We are aware that as the city of Newburgh goes, so does the nation with regard to PFAS science. And so it's important for us in the very first chapter of testing, health monitoring, to get the science right. And the city of Newburgh is going to be a part of that foundation of studies.
Caravino says Maloney's move to fund a CDC study is important.
And so what we're looking forward to is taking all of this work from Congressman Maloney's office, from the state, from various state agencies, the county and the city, and aligning them in a way that makes sense so that we can mobilize this quickly, begin the testing, begin the education of our medical community. Many of the physicians in the area aren't even aware of how you even measure, let alone treat, PFAS.
The CDC did not respond to a request for comment. Maloney also has introduced a companion bill to an amendment from U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. The New York Democrat in September introduced an amendment to the Water Resources Development Act that would require the Environmental Protection Agency to expand water testing for unregulated drinking water contaminants to all public water supplies. Currently, the EPA is required to test for unregulated contaminants in water systems serving more than 10,000 people. Here's Maloney.
What I want to make sure is that we understand this problem nationally. So working with Senator Gillibrand, I'm introducing in the House a piece of legislation that would require the EPA to test all communities for the presence of PFOAs and PFOSs in their drinking water.
Maloney represents the 18th District, and Newburgh has more than 30,000 residents.
You know, I represent a lot of communities under 10,000 people. Their health and safety isn't any less important than the people in big cities.
An EPA spokesperson did not respond in time for this broadcast. Again, Maloney.
There are going to be lots of communities around the country that are dealing with this. This is an emerging environmental issue, and the EPA has to have a greater mandate to test for this. We have to have better science on this, and we have to take it seriously and do it in time to do ourselves some good.
New York in August declared Stewart Air National Guard Base a state Superfund site, with historic use of firefighting foam the likely cause of the contamination. Newburgh now draws water from the Catskill Aqueduct, for which the state is picking up the tab. The state also will fund the installation of a permanent carbon filtration system, expected to be up and running by October 2017.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Meanwhile, mothers from Flint, Michigan, met recently with Rensselaer County residents. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there as they swapped stories about living with contaminated water.
Three mothers from Flint, a city dealing with toxic lead-contaminated tap water, shared a gymnasium with local residents at St. Mary's Academy in Hoosick Falls, where water has been tainted with the carcinogen PFOA. Darlene McClendon, a Flint teacher, talked about how fear and mistrust have spread throughout her student population. McClendon said after the lead issue was discovered, students came to school with tears in their eyes. She talked about the garbage bags draped over water fountains and a filtration system at the school that is still not up and running. She also noticed behavioral changes in her students.
It's sad to teach a lesson over and over and over, and the students still don't get it. They have nervous problems. They sit there and they can't be still. They can't attend. It's hard. It's very hard watching this day after day.
Flint mother Danica Jackson said she takes her kids out of town to take a bath.
We never thought that this would be, Mom, are we going away this weekend so we can get in the bath? Because I cut the water on in that bathroom and that water's still brown.
Flint mother and political organizer Lashaya Darasaw said many of her neighbors have little trust in government. Several, she said, have chosen not to vote this November. Darasaw was asked how she was able to get elected leaders to pay attention to the issue.
I gave them hell.
Darasaw has brought hundreds of affected residents to Michigan State Capitol seeking solutions. Flint's water crisis is inspiring political action across the country. In September, New York became the first state to require schools to test for lead after high concentrations of the heavy metal were found in several districts, including in nearby Voorheesville. Perhaps most important to those living with water tainted with toxic PFOA, the Flint mother said they were not alone.
And we feel you. We know what you're going through. And we hope it never has to happen to any other community ever.
The residents of Hoosick Falls and Petersburg shared stories of illness and cancer in themselves and their pets. While company Saint-Gobain has paid for filtration systems on the Hoosick Falls municipal water supply and on private wells, a filtration system has not yet been put on the small public system in nearby Petersburg, where company Taconic has been identified as the polluter by state agencies. The Hoosick Falls and Petersburg residents on the panel did not hold back against state health and environmental officials or the companies in question. Vocal residents Michelle Baker and Emily Marpey urged the audience to keep their governments and the companies in question accountable.
Accountability lies in this room. Yeah. It lies with our students, our children, our friends, our family, our neighbors, our elected officials, and you know the gals up here with us. The accountability is all of us, because if we don't speak up,
nobody's going to do anything.
Keep them accountable, whether it's elected officials or companies that are dumping chemicals, then we've failed as a community.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Cannabis and Hemp Association has opened a chapter upstate. Billing itself as New York City's leading voice for cannabis and hemp advocacy and industry, the group met last week to discuss the current state of the medical marijuana industry and its future possibilities. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was at the event, which marked the launch of the CHA Albany chapter.
The evening featured a lively discussion about the impact of new regulations to the Compassionate Care Act, a review of the first year of New York's medical cannabis industry, and a look toward its future. As of September, 7,627 New Yorkers were enrolled in the State Department of Health's medical marijuana program. Pamela Johnson with Electrum Partners says New York is behind the rest of the medical marijuana world, losing business to other states.
Businesses won't come to New York and can't make money in New York in cannabis, and it's one of the reasons that the industry is suffering, because it's not attracting business, and you need a thriving infrastructure. A good example would be Nevada for a 20,000 patient medical market, because Nevada's medical only right now. They do have reciprocity for tourists, but Nevada had 400 million $1 million spent on infrastructure just for that 20,000 patient market.
25 states and the District of Columbia now have medical marijuana programs. Johnston says education is critical to the success of New York's. Critics argue the Compassionate Care Act, signed into law by Governor Andrew Cuomo, is too restrictive, and that the process for patients seeking access to medical marijuana is a difficult one. Kenneth Weinberg is a registered medical marijuana doctor who believes the state will eventually catch up with the rest of the country.
If you look at the other states, they're making so much money when they've legalized it or made medical marijuana available. I don't know why Cuomo wouldn't do that. You know, there's so many jobs that could be produced by the growing, all of the different aspects of it. And, you know, I don't get it.
Eileen Konietzky is president of the American Cannabis Nurses Association. She lobbied to get medical marijuana legislation passed in Connecticut and New York and sees physician education as New York's most pressing need.
So if physicians understood the endocannabinoid system, which was only discovered in the early 1990s, I think that you would have more physicians that were willing to actually write recommendations for it because they would understand the science behind it.
Nearly 700 physicians have registered with the state to prescribe medical marijuana. Fred Paulsonelli is spokesman for PharmaCannis, whose PharmaCann LLC is one of five companies approved by New York to grow and sell medical marijuana.
PharmaCann operates a 135,000 square foot greenhouse right now in Orange County in the town of Hamptonburg. We're currently using 5% of it. We don't need more greenhouses in New York. We need more patient access points. And that's what the department's working on. We're all working together on it. And at the end of the day, it really is all about the patients. But it's also an industry. And if the industry is not supported by positive economics, there will be no industry.
Paulsonelli sees medical marijuana as a sensible treatment for opioid addiction.
We have such a heroin crisis in New York and such a dependency on these prescription pills that people don't need, and it's not good for them. And finally, we now have a medical cannabis program that's going to start to push that opioid dependency out the window. I really believe that. We're seeing it in other states. It's happening in other states, so that's not a coincidence.
CHA founder Scott Giannotti says changing attitudes toward marijuana have opened the door for the hemp industry's return to New York.
We have laws in place to now have a hemp industry. There's actually going to be an event on October 22nd where they're going to be educating people exactly how to register to become a legal hemp grower here in New York State. So it's something that is happening right now. It doesn't have the sizzle of marijuana because it's not drugs involved, but it's an important program because New York used to be a very strong hemp growing state. That's why we have towns in Long Island called Hempstead, Hemp Lake Park.
There's more information at WAMC.org.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1642. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustino.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.